Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, Current Defense Hour, Catholic Faith. That's what we talk about, 50 minutes every afternoon. Not sure if you're familiar with the Barna Group. I discovered these guys, where was I? Oh, I remember now. I was having a conversation with some evangelical friends. We were talking about the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, which is the research arm of Georgetown University that does Catholic research, right? So if there's a study out there that is not, that's faith, that's Catholic faith specific, it's likely it has been done by the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate. Well, the evangelicals have a research arm known as the Barna Group, and they look at a lot of interesting trends and decide, well, what's happening within the general Christianity world. And they also sample Catholics out of that as well, interestingly enough. So there's some trends when it comes to decision making in the election process I want to get into this afternoon, kind of see how it stacks up. Because are evangelical voters and Catholic voters a block or are they not? We'll talk about that a little bit this afternoon. Also, put this over on my Facebook page, video of a kindergartner getting threatened by a wooden paddle. This thing has kind of gotten some traction virally, this video. And now CBS News talking about this. We'll talk about that as well. More to come. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, 50 minutes every afternoon. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. Follow me at Leo C. Brown over on Facebook. We'll post things we'll talk about. You have time, an opportunity to chime in ahead of the discussion if you wish and discuss this over there as well. But sometimes those discussions get very interesting. As we know, Facebook often can. I posted this, and unfortunately, it just kind of posted a link. Like, typically, you'll see an image associated with the link, so I don't know why it didn't show up that way, because I was hoping we'd see one of these graphs that feature the differences, it seems, between Catholic voters and Protestant voters, and even those who are just skeptics. Apparently, they include those. I guess, I don't know how they classify a skeptic, if this is someone who just isn't sure, agnostic to some degree, atheistic, whatever. But an interesting sampling, the Barna Group, I mentioned this a moment ago, who does this type of research to look at trends and decisions and attitudes and all of this, typically within the evangelical church. But this one includes a Catholic sampling, and that's what caught my eye particularly. Talking about issues and voting. And I think that we hear a lot about single voting, single issue voters, right? We hear that. There are those who talk about, and especially abortion being that single issue. And I think we've also assumed, I think as Catholics, it's very easy to make the assumption that, well, we kind of own that, right? We kind of own that abortion mentality of the pro-life mentality of doing what we can to find the lawmakers, legislators, I should say, political leaders, whomever, who would have that focus. And interestingly enough, if we look at the numbers that Barna has represented here, and again, you could ask, well, okay, just because they self-identified as Catholic, does that mean what, you know, what's that criteria? We don't know. We don't know. All we know is that the numbers are here and they're interesting and they're worth pointing out. So on that abortion question, it looks like the evangelicals are at 69% that particular issue influences their decision, which is a tremendously high amount compared to other categories. Now, these are categories of other Christian faiths and then other non-Christian faiths, okay? So on that abortion issue, and again, I was hoping this would show up with this info so you could see it right there on the Facebook, but you click on the link, you'll see what I'm talking about because it's worth looking at. 69% evangelical, non-evangelical, born again, as they call themselves here, 29%. The notional Christian, I'm not sure what they mean by that exactly, but obviously in the Christian denomination, it's 24%. Non-Christian faith, interestingly enough, higher than both of those other two categories. And that's at 34%. And the skeptic at 34% as well. You compare this to the sampling that they have for Catholics versus Protestants in general, and we're only at 24% on that issue. So I find it very interesting that the skeptic and the non-Christian faith, whatever, again, however that's categorized, but still it's categorized as being something different than Catholic, there's a significant percentage point ahead on the issue of abortion. Surprising. I at least it was to me. And you could say, well, can we really trust that? Who are these people? Whatever you want to ask, because this is maybe how you challenge that. But what I find interesting is if you look at issues in voting, according to this study from the Barna Group, Protestants have a much higher response rate than Catholics on every issue. So the principles and the issues seem to resonate more with non-Catholic Christians. I don't know that there's any explanation really to this, but I find it very interesting when you see the snapshots of the numbers. For instance, religious liberty, which we hear a lot about these days, 49% of all Christendom find that of significant importance as a voter, compared to only 28% of Catholics. Marriage, right? I think another hot button issue, and certainly one that as Catholics we would want to protect the sacramentality of the marriage bond, only 30%. So the vast majority, 70% of Catholics say, not really important, compared to 43% of Protestants in general. Poverty, right? Isn't this one of our issues? Isn't this a theme, I would hope? We have those organizations that are strictly Catholic out there trying to combat poverty and find ways to help those in need. Only 36% Catholic voters find this of any concern, according to this study, compared to 48% of Protestants. And social justice, which, again, if you're going to miss the mark on abortion, marriage, and religious liberty, then you would think that the mark might be, at least the scales would be tipped in some degree toward this other side of the political spectrum, as it's often seen. And even on the social justice issue, only 32% of Catholics surveyed say that this is important or influences their vote. And interestingly, one of the higher categories, poverty is higher for Catholics than social justice, but one of the lowest categories for Protestants. So interesting when you see these numbers boil down and we wonder, well, what what is the influence, right? What is the criteria? Hairstyles? Fashion trends? Good orator skills. What is it? What do we find? What do we find the most influential when it comes to voting? I would hope that all of these are combined into a decision that says who's got the most compatible platform, I guess, is the way you would have to look at this. Weighing the issues, knowing that there's a number of important issues. Who's got the most in this? But interestingly, not what we see. The one that gets me the most is the skeptic category that is across the board on all of these questions with significant numbers. And social justice, for instance, 41% of the skeptics, which is higher again than both the Catholic or the Protestant on that particular issue. And shouldn't our faith inform us to say we need to be concerned about this issue? I mean, again, we don't know who was sampled. We don't know, did they talk to the right people, right? I think that's kind of one of the questions that always comes up. And it's like, well, they didn't talk to me, right? But they talk to somebody and they've got the numbers and it doesn't really look good, right? It doesn't really look good. There's some of the key issues that certainly people of faith should be concerned about. The skeptics surveyed are beating us by saying that these are important issues. So again, I don't know if it's simply because we're not well enough informed. And by the way, this is Barna Group's information. And you can find the link over on my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown, if you want to look at these numbers and maybe see something I'm not seeing. But to me, it raises the question of what are we concerned about? And if we don't have convictions on these issues, and even those of no faith or the skeptic, I don't know how they really categorize that. Again, does that include atheists? Does it include agnostics? Does it just include those? Like, yeah, I'm not really sure. It's kind of not really. I'm spiritual, but not religious, right? You hear that? They're concerned about these issues. Concerned enough that they have higher percentage responses. Now, naturally, what will affect all of this is who shows up to vote when we put people in office. There's no doubt. But still, I think it's I would hope there's some degree of conviction here that we would say, well, how do we get better, right? How do we become more aware? Because to me, maybe, and I don't know, I mean, I have to, I guess a part of me just kind of fears, I don't like to use that word often, but I'm concerned. I'm just concerned that there are those who just aren't paying attention. And we don't know what these issues are, nor do we care. And we're just going to go on through the motions and so-and-so's got better hair than this other guy. Or, I just don't really like the way that guy talks, right? I've heard people say, and again, not that when we talk politics and talk specific candidates, I'm not endorsing anyone. I'm an independent, and I wouldn't do that anyway on this platform. But there are those who simply say, well, you know, Kasich, he just doesn't really have the right personality. What? That's how we gauge our politicians, by personality? But we'll maybe look at his record. He's one of the only ones you can really examine and say, what do his leadership skills look like? Crazy. Crazy stuff. Maybe we need to pay a little bit more attention and certainly improve our stats. Come on. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, almost hour, 50 minutes every afternoon. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, and hopefully trying to make sense of some of the crazy stuff that's out there. And maybe looking at these issues in a way that we can say, okay, what does our faith, how does our faith inform us? And is there a better way, perhaps, of seeing things? We talked about the numbers a moment ago when it comes to voting issues and religious liberty for Catholics, not high, really, on the Richter scale of the concerns. And you've got to ask, why is that? Shouldn't this be something we're concerned about? And then, at the same time, I think we've got to ask, what does religious liberty look like, right? Because if we're concerned, if we want religious liberty, we should know what it is and also kind of know what it isn't, or at least maybe have an inkling. And this is kind of the question that I ask. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know. And I'm always open to your suggestions and messages over at my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown. Message me there, and we can discuss this because, again, I'll stand corrected when I need to be. But we've got a lot of backlash, right? I posted this story over on my Facebook page from this, I think it was CBS News, if I'm not mistaken. Sorry, ABC News. I keep getting them backwards. ABC News had this story. I posted it. Cirque du Soleil canceling their North Carolina performance. And this is not the first. There's been a number of high-profile individuals making the statement that they won't perform in North Carolina, Bruce Springsteen among them. Apparently some other big names, Louis C.K., who is performing, but apparently donating his money that he would make on the show into some sort of fund for fighting for equality in North Carolina. And, of course, the critics look at this and say, well, they're choosing not to do business with North Carolina because North Carolina has enacted a bill to say individuals can choose who not to do business with. And there are those who say, well, this is the height of hypocrisy or ignorance or just simply not saying. No, I mean, no, these are people saying, I'm going to do exactly what this is doing. Please see that for what it is. There's nothing hypocritical here. It's them saying, if this is what you're going to do, I'm going to do the same thing. It's irony, perhaps, yes, but not hypocrisy. Hypocrisy would be that they're doing this without knowledge or an understanding of what they're really doing and just simply whatever, without regard for making the statement that they're making. They are making a statement and not a hypocritical statement. They're making a statement that says what this law does is looks like this. That's what they're doing. So please understand that. The straw man of the argument the other way around is not fair and certainly not accurate in this situation. Agree with it or not, I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about accuracy here of what these people are doing. They're making a statement. They're making a statement based on the nature of these laws. Now, I am all for religious liberty, and I want us as Christians and Catholics to have every opportunity to share our faith, to live our faith, to exalt in our faith, and to influence others. But if in legislation we end up being kind of the, I don't know. It's almost as if it's a laughingstock. And you can say, well, we're supposed to be persecuted, and Jesus said we would. But that's simply for being who we are and standing up for the little guy and being the Good Samaritan and all of the things that Jesus shows us to do and how to live. We're going to be persecuted for that. We're going to be, right? When we step out there and we start talking differently, or we start saying, wait a minute, let's look at this from a different standpoint and let's find a way to handle this gracefully, and let's look at the opportunities we can have when we propose and not impose, we will be persecuted for that, just simply because there will be those who won't get it. And what's interesting is we'll probably be persecuted by the individuals who claim to stand for what we believe, but they don't like the way we express what we express. And then we're going to, interestingly enough, get it from within. But my concern in all of this, and I think that this is what I want to express as clearly as I can, is that if we enact legislation that looks, and I don't care what, you know, so, well, did you read the bill? Do you know what it says? It doesn't matter at this point, right? Because the perception is reality, and the perception is that there are those, there is a group of individuals who are being discriminated against, and it's hinged, please understand, hinged in religious liberty. It's labeled as such. So what that automatically does is says, you religious people, you either can't be trusted, or you are bigots, or you are off track on this. You got to understand the damage that is being done by this. Now, what can easily happen next is a retaliation based on the precepts laid forth here, the principles that are a part of this, and the fact that we have precedent set. All of this could be ammunition for someone to come back and say, okay, well, we'll do the same thing. That's what we're seeing already. Please understand, right? So when artists make this statement, it's not like, oh, look at those idiot artists. They don't even know what they're doing. No, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They're smart enough to know what they're doing. And anyone can do this. And anyone can do it legislatively should they have a majority to make it happen, right? So please understand what can come of this. And you can say, Leo, you're just being, you're being a coward and you're worried about what people think. No, that's not what I'm saying. No. I will confidently stand for my faith. But when we enact legislation that sets a precedence that then allows others to open a door to say, you know what? Here's my legislation then. Or here's my policy based on a legislation that exists that says I can discriminate against anyone I want, you Christians can't be here, right? I don't want anything to do with you. Religiously oriented, you get the heck out of here. We don't serve your kind. So you got to realize this is a slippery slope. And as I've heard it said, it's not a slippery slope, it's a cliff. We're running right off the edge. The challenges here are unforeseen circumstances. And we know that almost every piece of legislation has some degree of unforeseen circumstances. And it's often why we legislate from the bench, right? And we've had this conversation with Mark Crutcher yesterday. And it's unfortunate that we've kind of gotten our legislative process out of whack to the point that now it's judicially oriented. And all it takes is something being challenged, going to a court, and then eventually winding up in the Supreme Court, and then it becomes the law of the land. But this is dangerous territory. I think that we got to see that. I don't care what your faith dictates. I don't care how convicted you are when you begin, and nor do I care what the actual legislation says at this point, because it's perception that has gotten to this point. And there's a lot of momentum behind this. So the question really remains is, what happens next, right? Who takes this platform, twists it enough and turns it enough to make it become something that it's totally not? So I think we got to be, regardless of the ideas or even ideals that we may have, I think we got to sit down and go, okay, who could use this against us, right? I mean, if we're taking our plowshares and forming them into swords or spears or whatever the scripture happens to say, I think spears to plowshares to spears. If we're doing this, how can those spears be used against us should they get into someone else's hands? And I'm, to my knowledge, I'm the only one saying this stuff. I haven't heard anyone else from a faith perspective, say, I'm really concerned about religious liberty laws that may restrict others' liberties, because that can be turned right back on us. There's all this fear in our country now of those who may attack us, excuse me, that, you know, anywhere lurking around any corner, we've seen it before, we could see it again. There's another San Bernardino waiting to happen. There's another Brussels waiting to happen. And what we're doing is slowly opening the opportunity for us to be attacked in every way possible legislatively that will become judicially. Don't think that it won't, to where then we've got a law of the land that looks like nothing we even thought it was going to be when we began what seemed like a good idea at first. Now, you may think I'm crazy. You may think I'm talking a little bit. You know, nobody else is seeing that, Leo. Nobody else thinks that. Well, look at what's happening already, right? Look at the backlash, and you decide. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You can comment on stories like this. The AMC Theaters not allowing texting. After all, apparently, Adam Aaron, the CEO, made a statement of, hey, come on in and text all you want. We love your cell phone usage in our movies. Then that was quickly changed after a lot of backlash, saying, oh, really? I'm not going to come to your movies anymore if that's what you're going to do. You have everybody on cell phones the entire time. That's crazy. Now he's saying, oh, well, did I say you could text? No, that's not what I meant. You can just think thoughts of things that you would text after the movie. And then when the movie's done, you can take your phone out and text all you want. That would be the best bet, because if I said you could use your cell phone in the movie, I didn't mean to, because I want you to come see my movies. So interesting. But can we prevent this anyway? Right. I mean, and honestly, this day and age of stadium seating, you don't really see people in front of you anyway. Right. I mean, unless they've got their phone waving it in your face, I don't even know that I would know. Typically, when I watch a movie, I watch a movie. I don't watch people next to me or what they're doing or worry about what they're doing. Quite honestly, if they're quiet, I don't want them having phone ringing and things of that nature and bells and zings and things of their games, but whatever, I don't know. Not a big deal to me. I found this little meme I posted over my Facebook page. I think it's great because we hear this controversy all the time. Well, if the Vatican just sold all their stuff, they could feed the world, right? Sell the Vatican. That's what you need to do, and then the world can be fed. Which, this is an interesting comparison. The yearly operating budget of the Vatican, $300 million, which is not a small chunk of change. I think any of us would agree with that, but this is a global organization connected to almost, what, 2 billion? Well, what is it? I mean, is it over 2 billion? I don't know the numbers. I'm terrible with that. But a huge amount of Catholics, right, globally. So when you boil it down, it's really not that big of an operating budget, especially when you compare it to the porn industry revenue of 10.14 billion. I think I'm reading that right. Yeah. 10.14 billion. So who's got the better opportunity of feeding the world's hungry? Whose money needs to be better used? I think that's a pretty clear situation right there. So CBS had this story, and I'm sure it was picked up in other places. And I haven't watched the video, and I don't necessarily want to. And I honestly, I thought this was gone. I'm surprised that this could even take place in a school, but apparently it does. And this is a kindergartner being threatened with being paddled with a wooden paddle. I'm not sure if the youngster gets his paddling, but apparently the video is there with this threat, and of course the child is very upset. Naturally, I haven't watched the video. I'm just can imagine, but he apparently got into a fight with another student, spit on the kid. And he's 5 years old, right? Five-year-old kids hit and spit kind of on at least an hourly basis. That's been my experience. A couple of boys, one almost nine and the other almost four. This is par for the course. It's what they do. We may not like it. We may not want it in our classrooms, but is there a way to redirect behavior? And yeah, I gotta admit, I mean, I was the fourth child that came along in my family, and 8 years after my youngest sibling. And I know for a fact, and I heard it my entire life growing up, that I was parented differently. Right? There was something about the way my parents treated me, reacted to me, whatever, that was completely different than the other three. Now, the other three were girls, and my parents were a bit younger. Of course, a 12-year difference between me and my oldest sibling and eight on the youngest. And but again, they were like, well, you didn't get what we got. You know, all kinds of different treatment. And I can say this, just between our oldest and our youngest, I know that I parent differently now. And I know that there are things that I thought were good techniques that didn't necessarily result in what I had hoped for. And even though it seemed like a good idea at the time, and it seemed like justified response in behaviors, or justified response to behaviors, probably not the best way of handling certain situations. And I will say this, I have learned so much in the discussions that I've had with Lori Desitels, who talks about this emotional intelligence that has to be a part of any dynamic, even when they're very young. And throughout the rest of our lives, we've got to be able to understand that there is an emotional component that is here that is driving most of the challenges. It's not simply a behavioral disorder. It's not something that somebody has oppositional defiance disorder. I'm not saying that those things aren't real and they don't exist, but by and large, it is our response to the situation that can either escalate this to the point of being completely out of control, or we can begin to dismantle this in a systematic way that says, let's break this down and try to understand this better. And again, I'm surprised this has obviously got a lot of attention, because I think it surprised a lot of others. I didn't even know that paddling took place in schools anymore. And I was paddled. I don't even remember the first time. I don't have that memory of like, yep, I recall that wooden paddle striking firmly against my bottom. I don't know when that happened, but I know it happened repeatedly. And it happened repeatedly, right? It wasn't like once, okay, I'm good. You taught me my lesson. I won't be doing that again. No, there was almost like a toughness that kind of, and I remember in middle school, still getting paddled in middle school. And it was almost like this, I don't know, like a rite of passage, or you were tough enough to take it. And who cares? You're going to do your thing and be the goof off that you always were. And if you got paddled, all the better, right? That was, hey, look at me. I could take it. And then to me, I think it even led to other oppositional challenges that I had as a young adult. And pretty much any authority figure through college, it was not good. Not that all of my college professors acted like authority figures, because some of them acted like very respectable individuals and treated me very well. And actually, it wasn't even professors. It was guys like, you know, RAs and things of this nature. Students put in a position of authority, and that was like fire and ice for me. And again, I don't know if it was because of the early disciplines that I got that kind of taught me to fight back and taught me to kind of have this attitude of, I'm just going to get tougher. Bring it on. I'm just going to get tougher. I don't know. But I know it took a lot of unraveling for me, even as a young adult, to get out of some of those. And not that I'm completely cured. If you listen, you know I'm not completely cured, right? I still have attitudes about things at times that can be a little bit over the top. But again, is this the best method? Or could we listen to someone like Lori Desitelles that says, you know what? Everybody who walks into that classroom, or even walks into your home from the classroom, is carrying so much with them. Even five-year-olds, they're carrying something. And can we have a little bit of compassion and say, wait a minute, let's look at this. And, you know, we've talked pretty much at length, and we'll talk even more next week when we have Father Thomas Loya back, about the new document, Amoris Laetitia. And Pope Francis just talks repeatedly about a tenderness that we need to have in our families. And if we can learn that in our families, this is where we're on our best behavior. This is where we treat each other with the best that we can bring. Well, we don't do that. We don't do it in the classroom, generally. We don't do it even at work a lot of times. We don't offer our best. But what if we did, right? And what if this is what it really looks like to live that golden rule? And what if this is what it really looks like to do unto others and to love God and love neighbor? Because we're willing to offer our best and always be on. Never let our guard down. If our guard's going to be down, it's going to be with us dealing with whatever we're dealing with on our own and not taking it out on someone else. And I know that's a tall order, and I know that it's easier said than done. I get all of that. But is this alternative the solution? And I know that there are those who would argue with me and say, well, you know, that's what's wrong. We didn't punish our kids enough. Okay, so there was this golden era when kids were punished enough and everything was beautiful? Really? When was that? So we have time for. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown. Almost hour. God bless you.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.